Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
David Cruz for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Most New York public school students are enjoying spring break this week, but high school juniors who plan to take the SAT exam in May might just be spending part of their time studying vocabulary words and math problems. My next guest has a few pointers. After getting out of Princeton, John Katzman started tutoring the SAT exams in his parents' Upper West Side kitchen and eventually turned that business into the Princeton Review. He's now chairman of an educational tech startup called Noodle.com, but he's here to answer your questions about the SAT and the ACT. We can take some of your calls on this. You have a question about college admission exams, when to take them, how to prepare, call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692 if you're preparing for your exams or if you're a parent who's trying to get your child prepared. We'll post your questions, or you can also post your questions on our website at WNYC.org. You can click on the Brian Lehrer Show. Welcome to WNYC, John Katzman.
Thank you for having me.
So the SAT and the ACT, is there a rule of thumb for which one students should take?
They shouldn't take both. And the rule of thumb is if you're, you know, a good, strong student, you work very hard, you don't always do well on tests, but you do well day to day, you should take the ACT. And if you're kind of a slacker, but all of a sudden come through on tests, very linear thinker, like puzzles, then you should take the SAT. And that speaks to the roots of both tests.
I did terribly on my SATs.
Well, then you should have taken the other one.
Obviously, right. Well, thanks for that now, John. We're a little bit past that. So Kaplan and Princeton Review pretty much proved that preparing for the SATs was possible, right? So it's not just about aptitude.
It's not about aptitude, and people have moved past the notion that you could measure your IQ or that was something innate a long time ago. I think it's just common sense to prep for these tests unless you're applying to schools that don't require them at all, and a growing number of universities will allow you to take neither the SAT nor the ACT and just submit an application with your grades and your extracurriculars.
Why is that?
Well, these tests actually don't predict college performance very well, and they don't predict really much of anything else in terms of life performance. So one reason is that colleges have concluded they just don't need the scores to make better admissions decisions. The other is a little bit of real politic that the SAT and ACT present a barrier that a lot of students self-select and decide not to apply because of their scores. And you'd like to see those applications because you never know.
Right. Let's take a call now. Gwen is in Morristown. Gwen, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
My high school junior, she's a very good student. She's been in honors classes and has an AP class. And I just wondered, how important is it to spend all this money on the tutoring? Because it's so pricey now. It's crazy to me, the money that we have to spend for the tutoring.
All right, Gwen, thanks for your call. How much do these things usually cost?
Oh, it can be pretty expensive. You know, you can get a book and prep on your own for $20, but, you know, a good tutor might be – I've seen tutoring companies charge as much as $30,000 to prepare students for the SAT, which is nuts. A reasonable answer is if a student gets together with three or four other students and, in effect, forms their own class – you can have the flexibility of tutoring and work around everybody's schedule and work with somebody who's quite good, but bring the whole thing in for $1,000 more or less. And, you know, you're standing in front of a pretty large purchase. College can be as much as $250,000. Higher SAT scores can translate into significant financial aid. It makes sense to prep. It's an important test. It makes sense to prep well. But if you're really stressed for money, you can also just do it, the four or five students working together with a book and just working diligently week to week.
Listeners, what's your question on the SAT or the ACT? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. We're talking with John Katzman, who's the founder of the Princeton Review and now Noodle.org. It seems to me, I can imagine a parent now listening to us and you talking about $1,000 to prep for the SAT. Some parents, are wondering if they've got the money to pay for a registration fee for a college application.
Yeah, number one, college has become wildly more expensive over the past 20 or 30 years. It's outpaced inflation by several times. Higher ed is expensive, but it's a good investment still in terms of return on that investment and lifetime earnings. Similarly, preparation, whether that's just good hard work in school or preparation for these tests, it's expensive, but it's a pretty good investment. I'm no longer in in the SAT game, and it's not an important thing to me financially to prepare students. But I still really believe in the concept that somebody's going to give you a test. It's important. Financial aid and other things depend on it. The idea of not prepping is just insane.
It really is a big business, is it not?
It is a pretty big business and an increasingly fragmented one. Back in the day, it was really Princeton Review and Kaplan. Frankly, now there are maybe 1,500 test prep companies and tutoring companies that we've identified.
Does that make it better for consumers?
Not necessarily. I think, like everything else in education, more choice doesn't necessarily translate into better decisions. The reason we started Noodle is to try to help people figure out what the right college is, what the right tutor is, or who the right tutor is, and where to find the best resources for things like just a free video on the quadratic equation, right, when you're struggling.
Man, I wish I had one of those. Chris is in Greenville, South Carolina. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I was hearing about your show, and I had a quick question.
Cool.
Actually, I have been out of high school for a very long time, and I actually recently have found myself needing to go back to school. Well, I found out that my SAT is no longer valid that I took years ago, and they told me I could retake the test or take the ACT there. Is there any difference? Should I pay to take the SAT again, or should I go after the school there and just take the ACT?
All right, Chris, thanks for your call. What about that, John?
How'd you do on the SAT when you took it the first time?
Well,
did you feel good about the score?
1480.
1480?
Okay. Yeah.
So my gut is you should take the SAT again, that with a little bit of prep, just by yourself, just looking through a book and reminding yourself of some of the key things, that you're going to do just fine taking it again. The SAT tries to be more of a reasoning test, and you'll find that it's a little bit less content specific. You've forgotten less of the stuff that's on the SAT than you might have forgotten the content that'll be on the ACT. And you started with very strong scores. You'll do fine.
How much has that changed, Chris? Thanks for your call. How much has the test changed over the years? I remember when I took the test, you had a verbal score and a math score. I'm not a verbal score, an English score and a math score. Right?
They've actually changed very little. The SAT has slid a little bit more towards content and less towards reasoning. The ACT, which started as a placement test, has moved a little bit more towards reasoning. The two tests are fairly similar, again, with some differences. I probably 70% of the kids will do pretty much the same on both. The key is, I think, we're in the last days of both tests. As you have more and more state tests and now Common Core, I think you're going to start seeing you have plenty of test scores behind you, and colleges will stop requiring you to take a separate one for college admissions.
Norman is in the West Village. Norman, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much. I wonder if you would consider addressing how parents of young people with special needs, like, for example, ADHD or spectrum issues or Asperger's, Do you have any advice for us in helping our kids to prepare for these tests?
Good question, Norman. John?
There are so many different learning styles and learning differences that it's hard to give one simple answer to that. But there are tutoring companies that that specialize in one or another. For students, a lot of students think that more time on the test would be helpful, that's actually an impediment. My experience has been it's rarely the problem. And it's something that's easy to find out. You go get a test of SATs, take a test timed, fill out an answer sheet, and then tell your son or daughter, take as much time as you want to change any answer, look over the test some more, and create a second answer sheet, and that's the untimed test, and see if there's really any significant difference in scores. For other students, the accommodations range wildly. As a good counselor and a good coach should be able to help you with specifics.
Are kids any better at standardized test taking these days? I know that they are taking standardized tests so much more now than they did when I was in school. Are they any better at it?
I think they are. We've become a nation of standardized tests right across from fourth grade up. There are a couple of key things when somebody is bad at taking tests that you see over and over again. They tend to focus on the difficult questions. They rush through the easy questions and make a lot of careless mistakes to get to the harder ones. Almost every standardized test, every question is worth the same. So a careless mistake counts as much as a brilliant answer on a very tough one.
Right.
They're timid. They don't guess enough, and bad test takers tend to look for the right answer, whereas more sophisticated test takers look for the wrong answers and just eliminate. Everything is process of elimination. I'm not sure it's a great thing that we've become a nation of standardized test takers.
I mean that's a whole other show, probably.
Exactly.
Yeah. Andrew is in Garden City, Long Island. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi. I've been hearing that from friends of mine that it's better to take the test in May because there's a curve that works where it's where there are more people taking it, so typically the average scores are higher, I suppose. And I took it in March, and I was just wondering what's your take on it? Do you think it's true?
Thanks, Andrew. Are they graded that way on a curve?
There is a curve, but it's not by test. Pretty much every test is the same. What makes a test easier or tougher has a lot more to do with it just happens to test things that you know a little bit better. The vocab on this test you've seen before, and the vocab on that one you haven't. I wouldn't say that any test date is reliably easier or tougher.
How about how many times a student should take the exam?
I'm still a believer in prep properly. There are huge books. The College Board publishes a book. ACT publishes their own of old tests. If you want to practice, you've got a test that you can take for a couple bucks a pop. Sitting around a table and timing yourself rigorously is surprisingly like the real experience. And so my feeling is, prep properly. You're going to know what you're going to get. Go in and take it once. Get the scores you're looking for, and that's the end of it. I don't love the idea of just taking tests over and over again at $50 a pop,
right?
And ruining some perfectly good Saturday mornings.
Let me get Willa in here real quick. Willa is in Hopatcon, New Jersey.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Willa.
My question to you is, or not so much a question, but more or less a complaint, because I think the higher scores, it becomes a rich man's game. My son currently, he took. He has that Big Fat College Board book. He took 6 practice tests. He took 3 SAT tests. We wanted him over 2,000. He didn't do that well. He currently is a great all-around student, valedictorian of the school, great GPA. But he killed himself to try to do well. And it becomes a rich man's game because his peers and his friends that paid for the class, we didn't have the money or the time to spend on those extra classes or the tutoring. And all those other kids that do spend the time and money, they certainly do well. So I think it becomes a rich man's game, and I don't think that that's fair.
You're right.
Let me get John in there. Go ahead, John, real quick.
Yeah, I think the SAT in general has a huge bias towards wealth. It's the best predictor of scores is your socioeconomic status, and test prep makes it worse. And it's a good reason to rethink these tests at all.
I got 30 seconds, John. Tell me what Noodle.org is.
Noodle.org is a search for anything educational. You're looking for an instructional video, a kindergarten, a college, a graduate school, a negotiating seminar, a lacrosse coach. We want to be the best way to find that.
All right. John Katzman is the founder of Princeton Review and now heads up Noodle.org. John, thanks very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
David Cruz in for Brian Lehr on WNYC. Flat screen televisions and monitors are harder to recycle than the older models. On the next Leonard Lopate show, find out what's happening to this new kind of e-trash. Plus, hear the untold story of the man who invented the Manhattan street grid in the 19th century. That's today at noon on WNYC.